Aloha.
Hello and welcome. We are back from the BallerLifestyle.com. It's the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. My name is Brian Beckner. Thank you very much for joining the show. Episode number 453, a movie review, a Christmas movie, like we do pretty much every year. Happy that you're joining us for this very special episode. We appreciate you, all of you. If you would like, if you have thoughts on the movie we discussed today, 1987's Christmas classic, Lethal Weapon, you can call in and let us know. 949-464-8257. TBLS is the number to call. You can additionally, you can leave us a voicemail. Mailbag at theballerlifestyle.com is the email address. Moreover, if you are inclined to support the show financially, click the link in the show notes and subscribe to our Red Circle bonus content. That is where you get the extra stuff that we do each and every week. I was talking to a guy, a friend of mine this week, and he's like, am I getting the Red Circle? And I go, at the end of the show, do you hear me say there's a lot more that you're not going to hear? And he's like, no. And I'm like, then you're getting the whole thing, because we stop at some point. We go, hey, we've given you enough for free, but if you love us that much more, keep listening. There's a whole bunch that we still got to talk about. We do that each and every week. Also, I do a solo show, Bonus Bri, only available to the people that support us via Red Circle. And I occasionally post, if I don't overshare, I occasionally repost our stereo Baller Lifestyle Podcast after show that I do each and every Friday night with my dear friend Dolomite D on the stereo app. So please subscribe if you are so inclined. I am joined, as always, by Mr. Ed Daly. Ed, how are you?
Doing well. I hadn't seen this movie in a while. And me too. It was good to revisit.
Yeah, it's yeah. Look, it's a good movie. It's childhood nostalgia. It's
yeah. There's certainly nostalgia in, but I just didn't know how. But let's bring on our other guests. Yes. Because yeah, there's discussion to be had.
Absolutely. We are also joined now. I posted today's. Our dear friend LSU Lala reached out to me on Twitter and said, "Hey, are you guys done for the year?" And I said, no. We have dropping tomorrow the Christmas episode, Lethal Weapon. And then everybody said, how come I'm not on it? I want to be on it.
So we love all of you. Yes. And we love lots of our yes. guests. But this is the guy. But also every Christmas episode, right?
That's right. I think so. No,
this is the guy.
Hold on. We did Die Hard, and that was did we do that for Christmas? No, we did that with Mark the Nomad.
We definitely did that as a Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. But movie. But Jay Stu, who loves the Band-Aid Christmas song, Do They Know Christmas?
We did Charlie Brown. We did all kinds of Christmas stuff with Jay Stu.
Look, he's our go-to guy. Everybody loves him. He's a big star.
Yeah.
You know, we're lucky to have him. Of course, I'm talking about the great Jason Stewart. Jason, how are you, my friend?
Hello, everybody.
Yeah.
Hey, there it is.
There it is.
Hello now.
You forgot Jason, on our Bachelor show a couple of weeks ago, you forgot to do your signature sign-on. I had to stop you and restart.
Yeah, that's we can't have that.
Yeah.
Now, hey, a year ago, we did a Christmas movie. It's called Trading Places, subtitled A Very Racist Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, was great
that,
movie.
Did we do that for, I mean, that is a Christmas movie. Did we do it for Christmas?
Yeah, we sometimes we go very Christmas, like Charlie Brown or Band-Aid. And sometimes we do
Christmas time
kind of movies. So Lethal Weapon written by Shane Black. Yeah. I read a whole interview. This like there was a little small section in my book. Shane Black, he talks about how Christmas kind of gives a gravity to everything because people want to be with their families and blah, blah, blah. And so all of his movies, and I looked at it. I'm opening up my book, by the way. But Lethal Weapon, Last Action Hero, Last Boy Scout, Long Kiss Goodnight, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, even Iron Man 3, The Nice Guys, they all feature Christmas. It's all like at Christmas time. So he wrote this. I think this was the movie that made him as a screenwriter.
It definitely did.
And Joel Silver produced this, and he decided the next year, well, then Die Hard needs to be a Christmas. We got to make this a Christmas action movie. So this is the reason why Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, it's interesting that the screenwriter's name is Shane Black when cocaine is white. Shane Black, I believe, also wrote Predator, which he's in.
He is?
Yeah. So, yeah, he's one of those Hollywood guys. But this was this I believe he wrote this upon his graduation from UCLA Film School. I want before we jump into the show, I want to just do some housekeeping here. Jason, are you there?
Yeah, I'm looking it up. He didn't write Predator, but it looks like he acted
in it. He's in it. He's definitely in it.
Yeah.
He's notorious. He's a well-known guy. But before we jump into the regular show, I just want to do some housekeeping because we won't be on for a couple of weeks. And when we do come back, it's going to be a year in review episode, which we do at the beginning / end of every year. So
the mountain of rests in peace.
That's right. Yeah, there's going to be a lot. So I want to just jump in and take care of all the voicemails before we move on to the actual movie. Jason, you can participate with us. Here we go.
Awesome.
He's so easy to hate. Your time he likes to waste. His calls are far from great. His calls are far from great. He's such a stupid fuck. He seems down on his luck. His voicemails really suck. His voicemails really suck. No one's enjoying him. He's so annoying. Plus so fucking boring and worthless, but he's got nothing else to do. And he's even worse than Ish. His thoughts are useless, shit. He's fat and got big tits.
Hey, he's Manuel in Armenia. Couple quick voicemails.
Hey guys, this
LSU Lala and his beautiful southern accent.
This isn't a scoop it up. This is, I guess, a variation of scoop it up.
I'm glad it's not a scoop it up because I don't have that song handy to me. And also, we're not going to play it in the first 10 minutes, of course.
We'll get canceled.
That goes behind the scenes.
But if Dola were to walk into a room and on one side you have Guy Fieri and on the other side you'd have Danger Russ Wilson, how long would Dola have an erection for?
Wow. Dola being attacked early.
It's funny how absolutely terrible Russell Wilson
is. It's great.
Because remember, there were so many apologies, and every team that was sort of in need of a quarterback wanted him.
Sure.
Commies offered a ton. Even the Eagles wanted him.
He was coming off.
Like, fuck it, we'll settle with Hurts, who's way better.
He's the MVP of the league. He had a down year last year, but everybody's kind of like.
People made excuses. They're like, he's got a broken finger. He's really still great.
Yep.
He's not. He's bad.
What people don't point out, and Jason, you work in sports, so you might be able to reflect on this. What people don't point out is that despite his one Super Bowl, his teammates have always hated his guts.
Yes.
Yes.
He's a.
And I think that.
Yes.
Let's ride.
You're right.
When you have when you have talent, you know, we all played sports. So a lot of times all the other stuff is forgiven when you're the best player on the team and you have a ton of talent. But This year he sucks. He looks like he's not going to be the same ever again.
It's great.
So you're not going to put up with all that other shit, which generally speaking, I think the consensus is he's just a huge phony. No one knows.
Yes.
No one knows what's underneath that robotic. No. He's kind of like the Tom Cruise of the NFL.
Good point. Except Tom Cruise is talented.
Tom Cruise delivers
every
over
time
and over
every
again.
Time.
But if he sucked, he wouldn't get work. Whereas like, Bill Paxton was talented, but he worked all the time because everybody loved him.
Yep. Do you guys want to hear? So Jason's right, of course. So two things. One, somebody sent me a TikTok today that there's people are keeping track of will Russell Wilson throw more touchdowns this season than he has bathrooms in his home. And
I saw just to put it about my team, Carson Wentz, I think, still has more touchdown passes than Russell Wilson. And he was 1-4 with the Commies as a starter and hasn't played since. Yep. And he still has more touchdown passes.
So in his home, Russell Wilson, who lives in a castle, obviously, because he's very wealthy.
Yeah.
In his home, he has 12 bathrooms.
So does Ciara have like IBS or something? Like why?
That's a lot of bathrooms. That's a lot of bathrooms. To date, as of this recording, he has thrown 11 touchdown passes this season.
Jeez.
11 touchdown passes this season. So he's got, look, I'm going to look here. Here's his numbers. So this, he's got a soft number probably so they could get him under the cap this year. 17 million. 2023, that goes up to 22 million. 2024, 35.4 million.
But the NFL you can cut, but I think he's got a ton of guaranteed.
I think
money.
This is all guaranteed.
There's no cut in him. I think they're stuck for at least 4 years.
I think Jason's right. 2025, his age 37 season.
No, guys get much better when they're 37, right?
He's going to make $55.4 million.
Oh, man.
That year.
I think that's what is so disgusting about that trade.
Yeah.
You can go on Twitter and find like cold takes from April that are like, Broncos got the best of this deal and Broncos grade for the trade is an A.
Yeah.
The Broncos not only gave him all that money, but they gave away next year's first round pick, a bunch of other picks, and then actual current players' assets.
It's great.
I honestly think there were about six teams that were willing to give similar.
A
bunch of teams that wanted
people
him.
People wanted him. The Bears. Yep.
Yeah. Bears, Eagles, Commies. There were a whole bunch of teams in on him.
Apparently they can cut him after 2026. But they got to take a $31.2 million cap hit.
It's 2022.
I know.
This is crazy.
Or maybe before 2026. But if they hold on to him in 2026, he's going to make $58.4 million.
This is like the Jimbo Fisher contract.
No, it's great. I know.
There's so much money.
2027, $53.4 million. And in 2028, the final year of his contract, $54.4 million. So things are going well.
They made him. He and his agent compelled the Broncos to give him that extension because they didn't have to.
Yeah.
You know, when they traded for him, I think that was kind of a part of the thing is we'll take care of you. It was very smart on their part to get that money, obviously, before they put it down. Because I think Russell knew that the downhill had started. But at least
get
one
that
team
bag.
Didn't know that yet. I think Pete Carroll knew that.
Pete Carroll definitely knew.
Yeah, Pete Carroll definitely knew because he's at the end of his coaching career, and most coaches would say, you know what, I'm just going to stick with the veteran. I'm not going to like hope for Geno Smith to revitalize his career.
Right.
No, usually, old coaches are very selfish and don't care about the future of the team because they just want to keep winning. And he was ready to punt Russell Wilson.
He knew. Yeah. He saw the writing on the wall. So the answer is LSU, that Dola would have more of an erection for Guy Fieri.
Oh, he definitely is into him.
Oh, he loves him. Sure. He loves him. Here's another one.
Hey, Brian, Ed, hey, ballers. Mateo calling in.
Great, dude.
Hey, I just wanted to really call in and sing the praises of Mr. Ed Daly. Wow. I'm a huge fan of It's a Wonderful Life.
Jason Stewart, last week, I've never seen the film It's a Wonderful Life. You're a massive, massive, massive movie buff. Last week, Ed told me the details of It's a Wonderful Life and let me react to the madness that is that movie. It's a Wonderful Life. Jason, are you a fan of that Christmas movie?
A couple things. Okay. I listened to the first half of his summary. Oh. And then I was also thinking,
was not a fan of the recap.
Ed telling something to Brian that he hasn't seen, that sounds very familiar. Like, it sounds like our weekly Bachelor
That's
podcast.
That's not true. That's
where I tell Brian, I tell Brian what he hasn't seen already.
So it was too real for you. You had a Harlan Coben book to dig into, and you're like, actually, I've heard enough.
Now, but no, I'm not a fan, and I may have seen it once in total. But then it's on so much, and then there's so many like pop culture references to it.
Yeah.
But no, I have zero interest in watching it. And Ed's summary, from what I heard, maybe even least interested in watching.
I think I got what I needed, and that does. I do recall.
I love the movie, but it's. I knew it would be insane to describe.
No. Yes, yeah. It is absolutely. It was insane. I do recall. We also discussed here on this show the Christmas classic Love Actually with our dear friend Jason Stewart, who watches it every year.
Yeah.
Okay, let's continue.
I just got into a fight on Saturday night. Not a fight, but
physical.
We argued with my guy Steve Covino of Covino and Rich on Fox Sports Radio.
Brian
met him at my party.
I don't believe I did.
He thinks that it's a despicable Christmas movie. That the whole porn scene obviously it takes it out of the family genre.
It's weird that they're doing lighting tests for a porn. I feel like porn is not the most well lit movie.
Like, I don't even remember part.
It's stand-ins. Yes. Stand-ins for porn. I feel like porn. They don't do lots of prep. They just there's the couch.
Yeah, there's no stand-ins for porno. It's just it's just come to Chatsworth. Come to a come to a warehouse and lie down on this futon.
Yeah. We're gonna put this futon down in Van Nuys.
Yes, exactly.
But my point is that scene and all the nudity and stuff that adds to the edginess of the movie. It's an adult Christmas movie. Don't watch it with the family, but you'll love it as a grown adult. It's a
speaking
an amazing
of
movie.
Adult Christmas movies. I took my I went with my sons to that Violent Night
Avatar
Violent Night, which it's just Santa. It's like cartoon violence, like Kill Bill kind of violence. Santa's just mashing dudes left and right. Santa is delivering presents and there's a home invasion, and so he's going against all these bad guys, and it's like very violent. It's David Harbour is Santa Claus, and John Leguizamo leads.
I'm out. I'm out on anything John Leguizamo. I'm out. You know what I was watching? I was watching with my lady friend last night. Bad Santa.
Great movie.
Just never gets old.
Yesterday.
So good.
Yesterday.
Yes, same. So me too. It's so good. And just like the little jokes everywhere and Bernie fucking Mac.
Oh, yeah.
John Ritter. I mean, the Thurman Merman.
He's not going to say fuck stick around his children, is he?
So good.
Such a good movie.
So good. Okay, let's jump back in with Mateo here.
I watch it every year. Some years, twice a year.
Okay, that's, come on.
Ed's synopsis of that movie was fantastic. It was dead on. I watch that movie each year, and each year I cry at the end.
Okay.
I got good choked man. Up just listening to Ed describe the movie. He did such a good job. Brian, I know you're a little skeptical, but I'm begging you, watch it.
Okay.
It is fantastic. Jimmy Stewart does a great job. You know, it's 1947 when they made it, so it's going to seem a little dated.
Look, you're begging me? Let's grease the old pocket on Red Circle. See a donation come through there and some make,
probably the only description of that movie where I talked about a woman saying "blow my back out," Jimmy Stewart.
That's very good. 1947, Donna Reed.
Old, but you got to realize, I mean, it's almost 80 years ago, but it was a fantastic story. Great movie. I love it. Violet Bick, she was a piece. I tell you what,
that's the one.
Yeah. So anyway, another great job, guys. Keep it up. Brian, watch the movie. Okay. Take care.
Love you, Mateo. Great dude.
Love you.
Okay, one more, then we'll jump into the movie. Oh, yes, Jason.
One thing I'm unclear about, Mateo, maybe he can call back or tweet at us or something. I'm sure he follows me on Twitter. I don't know. Does he watch it every year, or are there some years when he goes and he doesn't?
Every year.
Does he tear up when he watches it?
It seems like he watches it every year and many times every year.
Yeah, he does. He absolutely does. That was vague. Okay, here's one more.
What's up, fam?
Oh, Telly Tupac
here. So the other day, I had one of the cool things happen to me in a long time. Loved it. Fucking love the guy for it. Walk into my
little concerned that Telly Tupac
The long delays tell me he's been at the basement bar.
He's been at the basement bar, and he's dipping into Manuel Ingardini story, where there's a great documentary directed by the late Peter Bogdanovich about the late Tom Petty. It's called Running Down a Dream. It's about 4 hours long. I would recommend anybody watch it. But one of the great quotes, because Tom Petty, he knew how to write a fucking hit song. If there's one thing that guy knew how to do,
Like his greatest hits album. You know how like greatest hits albums have like four great hits, and then it's like, well, that's not really a hit. He left stuff off, and he had like an 18 song greatest hits album.
His regular albums, throw on Damn the Torpedoes, you know every single song. He had a famous philosophy. He said, "Don't bore us, get to the chorus." And that is something I would recommend to all of the callers. Let's see if Telly is able to, because right now Telly's playing Stairway to Heaven. Like we're waiting for it to happen. Here we go.
There's a lady
in my basement bar, and the bartender, she's giving me shit right out of the gate. But that's what they do. That's how they make their money. And I'm giving her shit back. And she's like, "Well, I guess you're not getting your fucking Christmas present." And I'm like, "All right, well, I don't give a shit."
Oh.
She's like, "No." She's like, "Santa came in."
I feel this is like the beginning of a porno right here. I feel like we're auditioning for a porno, much like Love Actually here.
Mm-hmm. And brought you a Christmas present. It's hanging here at the bar. I'm like, "All right, well, let me get it." And then, so I take it. She's like, "No, you got to open it." So I open it. Oh. Luke from Fort Collins.
Shut up.
My guy. The best patron at the number one cigar shop in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Shut up.
Left. I know it was him. He signed it Santa, but it was him. Cause he's like, "Hey fam, I know you're not drinking ever again." It was directed towards me. I know it was him. "Luke, you're a fucking great dude. Love you for he left me a gift certificate there. Fucking love the guy forever." So Luke and I haven't brought it up on Twitter yet. I was waiting for Baller Lifestyle Podcast to come out. I'm going to take care of Luke. I'm going to go out and get fucked up. But Luke, appreciate it. Random fucking thing. And then imagine me trying to explain it to everybody, like, "Oh, who lent you this car?"
This is unbelievable.
I was like, "Oh, this one of my boys from Fort Collins." Like, it's fine. Good guy. But Luke, love you. We're gonna go have beers together, and then we'll tweet out some pictures of fucking shots of Jaeger claws.
I mean, a better explanation of the situation, Telly, would be to be like, "I listen to..."
Just want to shout out Luke in Fort Collins. What a great dude. He did this.
Yeah, yeah, But well, no, a better explanation would be, because I was moved by that story. A better explanation would to the people at the basement bar would be like, hey, I'm a fan of this podcast, the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. You guys should all listen. Yeah. And someone else that happens to live in the same northeastern corner of the state of Colorado that I do knows I come to this bar, and he also listens to the same show. We've come together as part of this beautiful community of people, of like-minded people that share in the same entertainment. And he came to this because he knows I hang out here. He came to this bar and left me a gift. I don't think these two have met in real life, have they? Telly left that part out.
Yeah, I think he did a shout out on Instagram.
They did communicate previously.
I saw some sort of Instagram, and I was thinking, oh, I never thought that these two people collided.
Beautiful. This is beautiful.
I love it.
I love that story, Telly. You were a little slow to get to it, but it was a slow burn. It was a build, and I like that.
Yeah.
You know what you did? You know what you did right there, Telly? And you wouldn't know about this because I feel like you're the kind of guy that ejaculates in 28 seconds. You edged me. You edged me right there.
Oh, we know about edging.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes.
My buddy in Amsterdam across the alley.
We were introduced to edging when Ed was trying to smoke a J and the guy at the other flat was jerking off.
Yeah. He was working his bird for like 2.5 hours.
Unbelievable. Too long. So, yeah, Telly, thank you for edging me. Luke in Fort Collins, you're a great dude, too. Love that you guys could connect. We're going to talk Lethal Weapon. Let's start by playing the trailer. You guys ready? Jason Stewart, you continue to live, yes or no?
Of course, let's do this.
Okay, let's do it.
I can already picture, without hearing the trailer, I can already picture the guy's voice.
It's fucking so good. It's an old school trailer. Check it out.
I know this guy.
He's a criminal's worst nightmare. A cop who enjoys the danger.
No guns, no jiu-jitsu, just bring him down.
Do you really want to jump?
Well, then that's fine with me. Come on.
Wait a minute.
He was ready to retire. Now, he's going to wish he had.
Gun!
Raj, meet your new partner.
New partner? Too old for this.
If these guys can just stand each other.
What you got in there?
Boyan Smith?
A lot of old timers carry those.
The bad guys don't stand a chance.
Don't kill anybody.
Don't kill anybody.
I'm too old for this.
Are you as good as you say you are?
Nobody can touch me.
Suppose we better register you as a lethal weapon.
You ever met anybody you didn't kill?
Well, I haven't killed you yet.
''87 Christmas classic, Lethal Weapon, directed by Richard Donner, legend.
Dick Donner.
I think he recently passed.
Yeah, he great.
He might be on our RIPs at the end.
He's like Superman, Goonies, Scrooged. He's done a lot of movies.
Scrooged, another movie I need to watch in the next few days.
Yeah.
Lethal Weapon, 1987, American buddy cop action comedy film directed and co-produced by Richard Donner, written by the aforementioned Shane Black, co-produced by Joel Silver. Joel Silver, he's the one that's got, he claims to have put up Wilt Chamberlain like numbers, except with dudes.
It's my understanding.
Actually, I
believe it.
Oh yeah.
Cause I think I told you there was a time I was hanging out, with some of Michelle's work colleagues. This was 20 years ago, and I saw how the game is operated.
Oh yeah.
And there was a dude who just like went missing for 20-25 minutes. I'm like, where'd you go?
He's
like,
work.
Oh, I just fucked that dude in the bathroom. Like, like wasn't hanging out with him, was hanging out with us, and then made eye contact, and they're like, all right, let's go do this, and then I go back to hanging out with my friends.
It's the best. What a life.
I know.
Starring Mel Gibson, Danny Glover, of course, Gary Busey, Darlene Love, many others.
Where was Gibson in his timeline here? Was it?
Mad Max, yes. Right?
Yeah, I knew that. You know, I'm trying to think of. He hadn't quite hit his 90s stride.
No, this is the movie. This is the movie.
Yeah, this was.
This is it.
Yeah, this is the movie. So
one thing about Mel Gibson, when I see him in like shit now,
yeah,
I can't stand the guy and. Can't really have trouble watching him, like separating the art from the artist.
Yep.
And there are a lot of times I have no problem with that. And for some reason, I'm totally okay with seeing young Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
I didn't think about him, but when I see older Mel Gibson, I just can't watch him. But this movie didn't bother me at all.
No, he is great. Hold on. Let's call.
He's pretty fucking handsome. With a mullet.
He's handsome. He's dynamic. He's got blue eyes, like he's Australian. Now, one of the things that kind of I wanted to bug me, and I always noticed it, is he sounds extremely Australian. Like he's trying to cover it up.
He's hiding the accent.
Yeah, but he is a little bit, but he can't. So he sounds Australian. And I'm like, what? You know, like, should I be mad about that? And then I think, well, Schwarzenegger never tried to hide his accent. Nobody cares. Like
I love The Wire, and McNulty certainly didn't do a good job with his accent.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's another one. Why can't I call up his? I'm on IMDb.
Okay, but the hair was to me, the hair was that was a selling point. I mean, people could rock that hair. There's the I don't know what you would call
it. You have to be handsome as fuck to pull that off,
especially on The Force.
It was like a perm or just like. Extra curly.
Yeah, it's just blown out.
In certain scenes, it was like very blown out.
Yeah.
But then when it was like finally coiffed, it just was like a straight up 80s mullet.
Yeah. So he had done Mad Max, of course, followed by the Road Warrior. And, you know, like a bunch of other stuff that you don't know about. The Year of Living Dangerously was a popular movie. He was in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, which is horrible. Then he did Lethal Weapon, and then after that, listen to this shit. Tequila Sunrise, Lethal Weapon 2, Bird on a Wire, Air America, Hamlet, Lethal Weapon 3, Forever Young, Man Without a Face, Maverick, Braveheart.
Some stinkers, but all high profile.
All big Hollywood movies. He did a voice of John Smith in Pocahontas. Ransom, huge movie. Father's Day.
Give me back my son.
Yes, yeah, give me back my son. Conspiracy Theory. I didn't know there were four Lethal Weapons. Lethal Weapon 4. That Payback.
Chris Rock.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
This movie, this franchise existed long enough that after Bring the Pain, people are like, all right, put Chris Rock in something.
Yes, exactly. The Patriot. What Women Want. We Were Soldiers.
So those. Then it became like. Then he had a bad incident. He's in the Jodie Foster puppet movie.
Yeah.
Like
the singing detective.
Father Stew.
Yep.
The whole Braveheart, obviously, but I want to say We Are Soldiers as well. And then there was a third movie in there, The Patriot. I think those were all directed by him.
Yep.
He got into directing, starring.
Yep.
And did some really fucking good work.
Yep. Then he started directing these weird biblical movies.
Yeah, I will say it happened around the time of the when he was abusive to his wife. Where he's like, "You shut up and blow me."
Yeah, yeah.
That movie that was in Esperanto or whatever language. It was good.
Yeah. Oh, really?
You're talking about Apocalypto?
Yes.
Apocalypto. Yep. I wanted to be like, "What is this piece of shit?"
Yeah.
I watched the whole thing. I was like, that was a good action movie.
It's an amazing movie.
Never seen it.
Looks cool.
Really?
Yeah. And it's annoying, but there's not, I think the thing is, because it's in whatever language it is, it doesn't have a ton of dialogue. It's a lot of like action.
It's all just, action.
Yeah. So you're not reading
about the Mayan, too much. It's about the Mayans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I recommend it. I definitely do.
Yeah.
So the movie starts out, and in case there's any question about whether or not this is a Christmas movie, the opening sequence starts with the song Jingle Bells.
Bobby Helms.
Yes.
Jingle Bell Rock.
Yes. That's right. Jingle Bell Rock. I mean, we know we're watching a Christmas movie because it takes place in L.A., which, of course, doesn't look very Christmassy, but it's clearly a Christmas movie because they're telling us with the music. Then we got...
There was one worrying thing in the opening credits, which looked very 80s, like RoboCop kind of font, but music by Eric Clapton.
Well, yeah. I
was a little worried.
I was going to ask you about that because... That is a big part of this movie, the score that Eric Clapton did with Michael Kamen, where it's like kind of like jazzy guitar and saxophone throughout. It really makes the movie. It really is. Yeah. It makes it different than other movies that it's all, everything is accompanied by the same sort of score throughout. How do you guys feel about that?
It makes the movie, it sets the tone, but every time I hear a saxophone, it brings me to 1987. Like, that's the most dated instrument for some reason.
Yeah.
Saxophone isn't in anything anymore.
But it fits the mood, and it's part of the vibe of this movie that I had sort of forgot. I mean, I knew it was there, but I'd sort of forgotten about, but as I watched it, I'm like, oh yeah, like this needs this. Like this kind of like sets the tone for the movie.
I don't know what is more 80s, the saxophone, which I agree with Ed. The saxophone throughout this movie, all it reminds you of is that it's in the 80s. But I don't know what is more 80s, the saxophone throughout or the end apartheid bumper sticker.
Yeah. Yeah,
so apartheid is over, so you're not going to see that again.
Right.
Yeah.
I read something. Usually I read more about like behind the scenes, but yeah. I did read something about Richard Donner. I was looking up like his film credits and I looked at his bio and he loved putting in political messages. And a couple days ago, I saw this movie. And then a couple days ago, I watched Scrooged and the Grace, the secretary, when they go visit her home to see how they're like poor.
Edie McClurg.
No, the black woman.
Oh, right. Name. Oh, Alfre Woodard.
Alfre Woodard. Yeah. They've got a giant end apartheid poster on their kitchen wall. So, like, Dick Donner in this era was, like making a stand. What? He said, movies that are about a message tend to suck, but if I have a movie about something, I like to throw my messages what? In there in the background.
Is Dick Donner South African? Because the bad guys in Lethal Weapon 2 were South African.
Yeah, I think he's American. He just hated the South Africans.
Interesting.
He hated the Afrikaners.
Yes, I never knew that. I never put that together. That makes a lot of sense. So this movie also starts out in a way that doesn't happen anymore with a hot, nearly naked, or mostly naked, drugged out girl in a bed.
You know who she was?
Jackie Swanson. I don't.
Woody Boyd's wife, Kelly Gaines.
Shut up. Kelly?
Kelly, that's her.
Stop.
Naked on Yayo on the balcony.
Now, that it is interesting because they see her do a big old gagger.
Yeah, a big bumperooski.
Yeah, and look, I'm not going to say that I have the most drug experience on this show. I'm going to guess that I probably do. And I guess that the listeners probably think that I do. I've never taken anything that immediately made me climb on a balcony and do a swan dive into a cutlass. Yes. That
seems PCP.
And then later they say, oh, well, they're like, she had enough. Somebody put Drano in the pills.
Yeah.
So she would have been dead in 15 minutes. I think she would have been dead instantly. My guess is if you inhale powdered Drano directly into your brain, you don't make it to the window.
Thurman in Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
You immediately just fall back on the couch.
Yes.
But they made her like frolic with her breasts out. It was definitely drawing in the viewer.
Yeah.
She climbs on the balcony and swan dives.
She looked like 80 different famous blonde actresses in the 80s. In fact, I wasn't able to place her. And then a couple scenes later, when Mel Gibson is looking at a picture of his late wife, there's another blonde. I just assumed it was the one that had jumped off. It was just some hair blown blonde, generic. Yeah. Everybody seemed like every famous or semi famous blonde in the 80s looked like Nicole Simpson Brown.
Yeah, they do. They have the video vixen look. It was very popular with the bangs, the blown out hair. Yeah, the hot body.
The only thing I'd say about Nicole Brown Simpson was there was a pretty strong jawline with her, though.
It's true. It
was
a little bit masculine. Sure. A little bit masculine, I would say.
And absolutely. I will say this, too, that I'm sure you guys have noticed, and it's probably been explained somewhere, but she is just the first of three naked characters in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. I like being reminded of that.
Donner let us know we were going to be into this movie.
No. Yeah, absolutely. And you could do that back then, you know, right. Like it's, we're in a different time now. We don't objectify people.
Right. Donner did,
but also we objectify Mel Gibson, Detective Riggs, Sergeant Rick. No, I don't know his rank.
We don't see his rig, but we come pretty close.
Yeah. Oh, we come pretty close to seeing, Roger Murtaugh's.
Roger Murtaugh, yeah, he's in a bathtub.
He's in the bathtub, his family's like a. First of all, he's a man that takes a bath. Weird.
I told you years ago on this show.
Yeah,
I had the flu.
Yep,
and I was like, I've got the chills. I'm gonna take a bath.
Yep,
and I felt like Patrick Ewing in there. My knees are sticking up, a grown man, even in like a kind of a large bath, it doesn't work.
Did you invite the family in to have a look at your cock while you were bathing? Because that's because Roger Murtaugh did. And that I found kind of weird.
So too old for this shit, Danny Glover.
Yep.
He's turning 50 to start the movie. And they're like, they come into the bathroom. That should be your private time. And it's like, hey, happy birthday, Dad. Let's all like look at your penis.
Yeah.
And it was weird. And I was thinking, well, he looks pretty good for 50. That's because he's 40.
40. Yeah, how fucking old is this guy? Yeah,
and he looks about 40, but they're making him seem like he does like grunt a lot, like a little too much for a 40-year-old man, or even for a 50-year-old man. He acts like he's 80, but he looks about 40.
Yeah, and he seems like he's near death. Go ahead, Jason.
I've never seen this movie before.
What? Oh my God. Jason Stewart.
I hit
this is worse than Magnum P.I.
Somehow it was completely off the radar for me.
But shut up.
This was a huge movie.
Jason, you're the biggest movie fan I know.
Did you see sequels?
No, none of the franchise. I didn't see any of the franchise.
So you are a gift.
I was just shocked that this large black man, it wasn't even a bubble bath.
Yes. No, it wasn't.
His entire family hugging him and kissing him while his cock was out, including a teenage daughter.
Yeah.
It was a little weird. It's so problematic. Weird.
It's a little weird. Yeah.
By the way, another Christmas hook in here. Danny Glover's house.
Yeah.
Is Todd and Margo's house from Christmas Vacation.
I thought it looked familiar.
Is that right?
Makes a lot of sense. Yes. I thought a little too nice on a cop's salary, by the way. And I know, look. And also they say,
if his wife is Darlene Love, she probably made money in the recording.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. And yes. Also, they say he lives at Third and Ocean at one point, which is in Santa Monica, which is even in the 80s was still the high rent district. I mean, he was, you know, he did well for himself, maybe based off his wife's salary.
This is kind of all over the map. I know we always do this.
Jump around
LA movies, but like, no, I'm saying like literally geographically, I want to say that first building that they did
the Capitol Records building
that you jumped was Capitol Records or like this Hollywood Inn building off of a Sepulveda in the 405.
I know what you're talking about. One of Holiday Inn.
And supposedly she was in Long Beach, according to the movie.
Well, there is that Holiday Inn in Long Beach, also off the 405 in Cherry.
So was that it?
Area is limitless.
Right. But then they say, but later they say it's in Culver City. So they're mostly this movie is meant to be based on the West Side. because also you can see the ocean from when they're outside of, not to get too like in the weeds here, but when they're outside of the hotel that she jumped off of, you can see the ocean in the background. So it's meant to be, I think, Santa Monica. I don't know. It's confusing.
Well, you know where the funeral was for the jumper, where her old man lives.
Palos Verdes.
I want to say that's San, is it Palos Verdes or Laguna?
No,
it
it's Palos Verdes.
Looks like Laguna.
No, it's Palos Verdes. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know what was funny? The commercial in the background when Mel Gibson's naked in the trailer watching TV, watching Family Feud, the Frank Perdue commercials where he describes the birds, they for like a decade, that was the selling point of Perdue chicken.
Oh.
Not that it's cheap or something. It was just an old man describing birds.
Disgusting. You don't want to know that you're actually eating a bird.
He's like, we don't have those scrawny birds. Ours are plump, and we fill them up with steroids and
right.
and keep them confined in a very uncomfortable place, and they peck each nice other's eyes out.
Yes.
that was the ad campaign. It was just Frank Perdue, I guess, was like, you're gonna put just like Dave Thomas at Wendy's. Hey, I'm putting up the money. You're putting me in the ads, even though I have no business.
Right, because I own the company. Yeah.
I think he died in a hot tub with like a hooker. Or something.
Oh, nice. That's how we all want to go.
Yeah.
That's the way to go. So
I feel like Shane Black would have written that.
For sure. So a couple things that I thought were odd. One, he's got his RV parked directly on the beach. I don't know where you can do that, and nowhere in Southern California. I mean, they do it these days, but it's just homeless people squatting, camped out. He lives directly on the beach in an RV. He wakes up. But when he wakes up, he has a lit cigarette in his mouth already.
Right. Now, my buddy, who's a fireman in the Bronx, there's a lot of people that start fires because of that.
Oh, it's a very common way to die.
And stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Did you guys also happen to notice, aside from the Frank Perdue commercial, what he's watching on TV? He's playing The Feud. He's playing The Feud, which oh, yeah. I need to point out, was and still is a nighttime game show. So is he waking up in the afternoon? Is that what's going on? Because it's light outside, and there's Dick Dawson, who would come on TV and tongue kiss your grandmother. I think Jason, I think we lost Ed for a while. Hopefully he can jump back in here quickly. So Roger Murtaugh is contacted by his Vietnam buddy. And this was a very common, the Vietnam veteran was a common trope back in the day, but it has struck you as odd that Murtaugh and Riggs, despite being supposedly generations apart, like the whole thing about them being partners is that they're like, this guy's old. This guy's sort of the young buck. He's a fucking wild. He's a loose cannon, blah, blah, blah. But they're both Vietnam vets. So they can't be that far apart in age, right?
That's a weird one for me. That threw me too. Cause when they went to, when he goes to the gravestone and looks at his dead wife's years, I want to say it was 65 to 87.
They made her 32.
And I mean, that doesn't even add up. If he's in, say, his mid 30s, he couldn't have been in Nom.
So
that was a weird one for me. The math doesn't add up.
I read that Murtaugh's supposed to be 50. So I guess he was in Nom. Yeah, I guess he was in Nom in the early years.
That adds up.
And then Riggs is supposedly 38, which puts him in Nam during the later years, I guess. This is where we need Ed, because how long did Nam go? I mean, it went from the early 60s.
67 to 73, I want to say, is when all the heavy shit went down.
Yeah, so but they were there in the 60s, because remember, Kennedy wanted to get us out of Nam, and that's why the CIA killed him.
No, I'm just saying the real heavy shit when we started sending over a lot of troops was like 67, and then it went through 73.
Right, so 73, if he's 38 in 87, 38, so he was 20 when he's in Nam, and then
maybe,
and then what's his name? Murtaugh's like 30.
It was strange. But yeah, you're right. All these, most of these cop stories, novels in the 80s, all those cops had, were veterans.
Yeah.
Were some kind of
for sure.
Special.
Because that's what you did afterward. And then, so there, so Murtaugh goes there to investigate the suicide, the believed suicide. She swan dives, lands beautifully on her back on a cutlass. Like, look, I wouldn't suggest looking up falls from buildings, but that's not what they look like. Your legs are akimbo. Things are turned different ways. Your brain has been evacuated from your head. It's bad. Yeah. You don't want to see that, but she looks very peaceful. And they go and they're like, hey, were there any witnesses? And they're like, yeah, some hooker. And then, you know, it's not a way we would discuss things these days. and then Murtaugh goes, who was paying the bills? Find out who was paying the bills to the other cop. And the other cop goes, well, that'll take some looking into. And he's like, we'll do it. Well, it's the first thing you would do. You go to the front desk and go, hey, somebody jumped off the fucking building. We need to find out which room. And also who rented this room. It would take zero looking into. It would take one question to whoever's running the front desk. And then you would know. It's that simple. Like, not like a big ask. Like, how lazy are these cops? Yeah, how lazy are these cops? What's that, Jason?
Glover's a bit melodramatic in this one. I mean, he goes from 0 to 100 pretty quick. He finds out that it's his buddy's daughter.
Yeah,
and he just gets really weird and short and violent right away.
But it's good.
But yeah, I think that so they had to establish that. But then they go to this fucking weird ass drug deal to show what Mel Gibson's character does. I guess he's Vice.
Kiedis' dad?
Yeah. Yes. So that this is an important part, and I'm glad Ed rejoins us now after some technical difficulties. Ed, glad to have you back.
I got ghetto Wi-Fi.
It happens.
Is that Kiedis from Red Hot Chili Peppers? His dad's in this?
His dad is the last guy in the shootout, right?
Blackie, damn it.
I did not know that. Okay.
He's doing a deal. Always weird to me when they cut open the bag of cocaine with a knife, because then it's like, well, all the cocaine is going to leak out of that bag.
Yeah. Have you ever accidentally like ripped the bottom of a bag of flour or sugar?
Just throw it away.
It's a mess.
There's no going back.
But you can't do that with cocaine.
No, it's all going to spill out, and it's expensive. Like you got to be careful with that. You open a bag of sugar to make some cookies. And first of all, why is everything still coming in that big, like, paper? Like it's the 1400s.
With bad glue.
Yeah. Like, what?
Because sometimes you bring it home and it's already leaking.
Yeah. It's like, we're going down to the general for provisions. Yeah. I'm going to get some sugar. And it's in a paper thing that's sealed with like other paper. What year is it?
It was packaged with Nellie Olson's mom from Little House.
Exactly. So you got to put it in a bigger bag. And then here's, Sergeant Riggs or whatever is, I need his rank because I keep saying sergeant and it's not that.
Captain?
Detective?
Captain. He's Vice, right?
Yes. Narcotics. He's narcotics, and then he moves to homicide.
Did I actually, maybe I wasn't paying attention enough. I assume, did you guys talk about the hostage situation at the school? What was going on in that scene? When...
Do you mean that
it was just show
the hostage situation?
It wasn't like there was a shooter at a school, but like he wasn't shooting kids. He was shooting at. I just didn't know what was going on in that scene where they're trying to show Mel Gibson Riggs is nuts and he has no problem with a shooter shooting at him in the playground. But like,
what I don't remember that scene at all.
I don't either, buddy.
Is this Lethal Weapon 2?
Are you watching a different Lethal Weapon?
You're in the wrong movie.
The first scene to show he's crazy, he just walks right up. There's like a sniper at a school. I have the movie on right now. I'm watching.
This is not in the version that I watched.
I don't remember.
Is this
the
director's cut? Is this the director's cut? Because he does the thing where he handcuffs himself to the other guy, but that comes after.
Before that scene. Yeah. This is before the scene. There's just a random shooter at a school playground and he walks right up.
This is not only not in the, this is not in the theatrical release of the movie yet.
I'm telling you, I'm watching there's the guy, one of the cops is the guy who invented Skynet. The black dude who invented Skynet.
Yeah.
He's one of the cops. This didn't exist.
No.
No.
Absolutely. I didn't
see it. The first time we see Gibson in action is this stupid drug deal.
Yeah.
But,
he does. Yeah,
they do a lot wrong in this drug deal.
So I've got an alternate version.
You do. He's he does the drug deal at the, and then he's like, then he does the Curly Joe thing.
Yes. Yeah. He rubs his face. Woo-woo-woo. Yeah.
And it seems like you kind of vet your buyer. If you're going to sell $100,000 worth of cocaine, you kind of like have to know the guy a little bit. And then he's like counting out like 91.
The version I'm watching. Yeah. I think he's drinking Meisterbrow with these guys in the Christmas tree lot with Anthony Kiedis's dad.
Yeah. That happens. And then, yeah. And then he's like, shoot him. And yeah. Anyway. He gets away, and this is how he sets him up. Now this is interesting because then we flash forward to this is the most realistic part of the movie, because we flash forward to that we're at the precinct, probably this downtown LA. We're at the precinct, and the mom from Goonies is there, and she's like, she's telling the captain or whatever. She's like,
wasn't she married to Dick Donner? Didn't we like?
Oh, I don't know that. Yeah.
Well, I think we did another. Oh, she was also the reporter and in the background of Back to the Future. She's been in stuff.
She's always in stuff in the 80s.
Why was she in stuff? Yeah. And it was because she was married or dating Dick Donner.
What a gig.
Oh. Okay.
So she's there and she's like, look, she's like, this guy's suicidal. She actually says, and this is like the coined term. She's like, he's on the edge. She's like, he's suicidal. He's probably going to kill himself. And the cop's like, the captain's like, yeah, well, you know, that doesn't really bother me. Like, it's not my problem. I'm going to put him back on the street. Most realistic scene in the movie, LAPD sending a clearly unfit cop back out onto the street.
Yeah, love it.
What's the worst that could happen?
Right. Yeah, he could, you know, kill somebody. So then we get the I'm too old for this shit. We find out they were both in and we talked about this while you were gone, Ed, and you can explain this better. They're one guy's 50 and the other guy's 38. They're the whole point of the movie is that they're generations apart. And yet they were both in NAM.
Yeah, I was doing the math. I think I did the math that it was Gibson's time in NAM was maybe 4 months before we ended operations.
Right. And he's doing assassinations for Shadow Company for the CIA. You can't do that at 19 years old. You got to train a little bit.
Yeah. That's for an experienced guy that they already announced his death. So he can be a mercenary for them.
Right.
Off
right.
the grid.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was a little.
Not a 19-year-old.
They played it fast and loose, but that's just how they did things back then.
The math is a little loose. So as they're walking out, for whatever reason, they're put together. So I guess the gist of it is the police actually take the advice of the psych and they give Gibson to Raj as some kind of a redeployment something.
That's not really explained.
He's the steady old guy who grunts a lot. So maybe he'd be a steady presence in the suicidal
doing homicide.
But they essentially give him a promotion to a more dangerous job. They're like, hey, look, this guy's clearly nuts. Let's have him go out and find killers.
And also, is this a demotion to Roger Murtaugh? Because it seems like he's well respected on the job.
Yeah.
And now they're like, you were doing such a good job. We thought we'd handicap you with an unstable partner.
Right. Yeah. And he's like, are there no protocols there? Because he's like a partner. Like what? Some guys have partners. Some guys don't. Like, it seems like he would be seen considering he's 50 years old and about to retire. Also, retirement at 50
is like
nice, buddy. Yeah. Yeah. He's getting towards the end. And all of a sudden he's saddled with a partner. Meanwhile, what? Some other guys don't have partners. It's confusing.
Oh,
as they deliver the title of the movie, we heard in the trailer. But I mean, it's a really strange way to deliver the title of the movie. So,
oh yeah,
as Raj is walking with Riggs out to the parking lot, or in the parking lot, he says, I heard you are heavy in martial arts, Tai Chi and all that killer shit.
Yeah.
Now, Tai Chi, I don't know a whole lot about martial arts, but isn't Tai Chi that shit that that like 90-year-old Chinese man do in the park?
Yeah, I was going to say, you always see old Chinese guys doing it in slow motion in the park.
Like, I would say,
you would have to, you would be able to defeat really slow ninjas.
I actually know a little bit about Tai Chi. It is not, it's, I guess, it's a on the fringes of a martial art, but it's a practice. It's more like
you're
meditation.
Chopping air, right?
No, you're holding a ball of energy in your hand. That's what, that's the move they're doing. They're always with the ball of energy. They're moving around this ball of energy. It's more like a dance. It's
Right. Did you notice?
Yeah.
Of all the disciplines of martial arts, Tai Chi was mentioned. I don't know if that was, if that was written in as being ironic, or the writers
didn't
fucking know.
It had to be. It had to be.
Okay. Well, then, so then he says, Tai Chi and all that killer shit, maybe we should register you as a lethal weapon.
So I have a thought about that. I have a thought about that.
Do you think, are you saying Shane Black wrote that in, or do you think Shane Black had, you know, a buddy cop name, and they picked and they plucked a line from the script.
So it was ADR, because it's, and there's a lot of ADR in this movie. If you notice, there's a lot of times where they're either not close enough to the mic, to the boom or whatever. And it's almost like a samurai movie where they have to overdub a lot. And in that part, he's saying it across the car, and it's from the back of Murtaugh's head. That's clearly ADR, where they're like, let's get the name of this movie into this scene. And they probably had a working title that they changed.
I have to be honest. I love when the title is spoken in a movie. I love it.
It's kind of fun. I agree.
I just find it funny. Like, hey, there it is. There it is.
It's kind of fun.
It's fun if it's like organic and it's clever. This wasn't. This just seemed forced.
No, but even forced, I find funny. Like it, that's great. It's just, I love it. I
like
love
it too.
Bad. But did you notice what, around the time that the Goonies mom was talking about he was suicidal, he was talking in the office with Little Johnson from Die Hard, one of the helicopter pilots?
Yes. I was wondering where I knew that. I was like, was this guy Theo's friend on the Cosby Show? Yes.
When the guy was like, what's his name? Robert Davi was like,
yes.
Hey, doesn't this remind you of Nam? And he's like, I was in junior high, dickhead. Well, I looked up that actor. How about this for a moniker?
I don't know.
That actor's name is Grand Bush.
What a name.
What a name.
Grand
what a guy.
Bush. Yes.
What a career. I guess Joel Silver liked him enough to put him in the next
That's
movie.
The best. So he meets his new partner. Then we're introduced to the great
Joshua.
Gary Busey. Yes. But before, I believe this was before he bounced his head off a curb.
Yes. He looks a little more composed.
Yes. Sort of normal. He's, they're in a club. They do their business out of a club somewhere.
But there's like three that guys in that scene.
Yeah.
That guy Mendez.
Yeah.
I don't know what I know him from, but he always played like a criminal or a junkie.
He's really good.
Mendez.
He's got piercing blue eyes, and he's got a very recognizable face from 80s movies. So
very strange.
And then the general, another guy who died this year, Mitchell Ryan. Oh. He played the subject in the fucking John Cusack assassin movie where he goes back to his high
Gross
school.
Gross Point Blank.
He plays the mini driver's father.
Right.
But he was in a ton of stuff. He was that guy also.
He died this year, but his toupee for sure lives on. Like couldn't have been buried with him.
Yeah. But that's one of the lines delivered by the Hispanic guy with the blue eyes. Like, I'm guessing if you're a Lethal Weapon fan, this is one of the lines of the movie, but it sounds so awful to someone like me who's never seen the movie.
Yeah.
When he's talking about Busey,
this is a great line.
Where'd you guys get him? Psychos are us.
It's amazing. The whole scene's amazing. He goes, what are you using? Mercenaries? What do you give a shit, guy? They're trafficking heroin from Asia. Like they probably want to keep their heroin safe coming from Asia. Wouldn't you use the best, most lethal killers you have? Of course you would. Now
you're bringing a horse from Laos.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So then he, but this was interesting to me. This is a famous scene. He brings in Mendez, and Mendez is like, I don't know about these guys, blah, blah, blah. He's bitching a lot for a guy that wants to buy a gross amount of heroin.
Yeah. I mean, wasn't super hard. Yeah. As soon as he gets in there, he's crying.
They're like, do you smoke? Do you have a lighter? And they make him light the lighter. And then he's freaking out because the general's like, look, my people are very loyal, which I appreciate. And then he's like, Mr. Joshua, your right arm, please. And then he holds the flame to his arm for an extended period of time to prove Mr. Joshua's loyalty. My question to you is,
what's in it for Joshua?
What's in it for, not only what's in it for Joshua, how did they discover that they had this test that they could show people? Like, what's like, was this the first time they did this? Do they do this every single time they sell somebody H? Like, what's, and also, why do you have to prove to the buyer that your people are loyal? What does he give a shit? He just wants to buy the heroin. He doesn't care that your fucking guy will put his arm in a lighter.
What would be the point?
No, it didn't make no sense.
It was just like a party trick that Busey wanted to show off?
It was a strange turn. But Busey, he's the strong, silent, like he's a good foil for Riggs in this movie. And he really kind of makes the movie. Like he's got a lot of gravitas. I think he's good for that.
It feels like we have done at least three Busey movies. In fact, we have. So we did Under Siege.
Under Siege and Keanu, the other.
Point
Break.
Classic.
And like Busey's characters are horribly written in all. Was it Busey's acting or was it the writers that wrote his characters? They're all ridiculous, over the top people that aren't realistic at all.
I
can't quite figure it out.
I would actually say that in this one, he's certainly written as over the top. In this one, I think he's actually a decent actor. In the other ones, I think this guy's terrible, and it probably has to do with hitting his head on the curb.
Remember, he was nominated for Academy Award. He played Buddy Holly in the Elvis. Buddy Holly story.
Oh, yeah. Buddy Holly.
Yeah. So he's...
Telling me that he had not hit his head during this movie?
I think it was time that he hit his head.
I'm going to look it up.
I'm going to say after. Yeah. It was just after this. So then they do
We'll get to it. But the biggest fucking Gary Busey strange moment in this movie.
December 4th, 1988 is when he domed himself wearing a helmet.
Yep.
So I guess then the writing is who we have to blame for him thinking that he can't outrun a guy on foot in a car. And you have to freak out and go on the wrong side of the freeway.
Yeah, that was a confusing
point. We'll get to it.
So we're introduced to Michael Hunsaker. Turns out his daughter was doing pornos and we don't get the backstory. That's probably a scene that got cut that Murtaugh owes him for something that happened in Vietnam. But he's like, hey, you go find these guys and kill them. I feel like there's a better way to say that to an LAPD officer.
Yeah, he makes it crystal clear. Yeah. He needs them dead.
And then not to get too LA about it, but they come out of that and they they're getting a hot dog from a hot dog vendor, which almost doesn't exist, especially back then in LA. And then they're
across Los Angeles.
No. Right. Not in LA. And then they're at the corner of Wilshire and Western, where of course the Wilshire Theater is, where the Lost Boys is playing across the street, except that is not a movie theater. That is a concert hall. That is not a place where that's ever shown movies, as far as I know.
Did Joel Silver have a reason?
Yeah, he must have had a piece of that. The Lost Boys.
Because you see that type of stuff happen.
Yes, I didn't even think about that. Then there's the thing where the guy's going to jump off the building. I don't know how much of that we have to cover. He goes,
Why add that scene?
It's weird. We already know he's crazy.
Right. That's the thing. And I think it's also to get in the line, no guns, no jujitsu. Just get him down.
Yeah.
Don't kill anybody. The real head scratcher is that this massive inflatable thing that they put below jumpers,
they didn't see
somehow
it.
Didn't disappeared see it. Out of nowhere.
And for sure, one of them
knew it was there.
One of them gets their arm ripped off or shoulder dislocated or at the very least degloved, jumping from a four-story building handcuffed together. Like, there's no way you both come out of that fine. Nobody's got a broken arm. Although, let's remember, and Jason, you won't know about this because while you've seen every episode of I Love Lucy, you've never seen Lethal Weapon.
Or Magnum P.I.
Or Magnum P.I. In Lethal Weapon Part 2, one of Riggs' party tricks is that when he is, what do they call those? Straight jacketed. You don't see those anymore.
They used them a lot in the 80s.
Yeah, it's like quicksand. He's straight jacketed and then thrown into the ocean. He is able to free himself by dislocating his shoulder. I proffer to you that this is an injury garnered from that time he jumped up. He dislocated his shoulder. Tell us about it.
How could you not when you're handcuffed to somebody else?
You're handcuffed to a crazy guy.
You're either going to collide with the guy or you're going to separate your shoulder.
Yes.
Or worse.
Unbelievable.
Well, the weird thing is that in my notes I had written, how does he get out of the, you know, when they're electrocuting him and torturing him? How does he just all of a sudden get out of that maneuver if he doesn't have a dislocated shoulder?
No, because he's only hung there he's tied by his hands and feet. But it doesn't matter.
It seemed kind of weird at the time.
He's hung from a hook. He's not actually clipped into the hook. So once he, and spoiler alert, once he strangles in a jiu-jitsu-like maneuver, once he strangles Endo, the great Al Leong, who's played exactly that same character in every movie he's ever been in.
Uli from Die Hard.
Yes. Once he strangles him with his feet, he's able to push himself off the wall and just lift his arms off the hook that he's held by. And so he's only held by his own weight. Look, huge mistake by Mr. Joshua and, for that matter, Endo.
No, it's one of the rare movies where the bad guy tells the good guy everything that he's going to do, and then he leaves the room.
Hey, just go ahead and kill him, Endo. I'm out of here. I got to be back in the club.
You got this one.
I thought Austin Powers did a good job with that, where he's like,
Yeah.
You're not just gonna kill him? Yeah, why are you gonna walk away?
Yes. Right. It's Scott Powers. So then they go to the pimp's house, right? That's a big one. They go to the pimp's house and they're allowed in by, you know, they're invited in because they don't have a warrant. And then women are just like measuring cocaine, like right there in the front window. And then some guy randomly just tries to machine gun them. And this was always like a real stressful death to me. And this was, and deaths like this were really intense in the 80s. Cause I was young, but they shoot the guy. Well, first of all, Murtaugh brags that he shoots. He's like, see that? I shot him in the leg. So we can question that. Well, you're bad at shooting guns because you don't shoot to maim.
Right.
You could be shot back. He shoots the guy in the leg. He's like, hey, see, but they don't secure the guy's arms. He's laying there writhing in pain. He could have any manner of weapons, but they do nothing to secure the guy. Of course, he comes out with a gun. They shoot him again, and then they throw him in. The pool's apparently, there's painting going on because there's a weird pool cover that the guy falls in and then he rides around and drowns. Was that stressful for you guys? Cause that was very stressful for me as a child, and Jason, you as a 50-year-old, because you've only just now seen the movie.
I think maybe in the mid eighties, the LAPD maybe hadn't been taught to remove the weapons from the person you're apprehending, because at the very end, after the fist fight that they had to fucking do, the cops that were in charge of apprehending them, as the good guys turn their back on Busey, they also let this happen.
They get their weapon taken from them. But then again, not great police work. They're like, okay, we wrapped up this case. The guy that shot at us must have been the guy, so we're out of here.
He's dead.
Yeah, like what? I'm looking from across the street. I'm like, oh, that's a henchman. That's not like the actual guy.
Yeah, this Glenn Frey looking dude is not the guy.
You're looking at it. I'm like, oh, this is like Victor Maitland's house in Beverly Hills Cop. I'm like, of course, there's dudes with machine guns. The main guy does not stand outside with a machine gun shooting at cops that come in.
Well, Glover, who my theory is he's a horrible cop. I mean, this guy has been cashing checks and he's 50 years old. He just wants retirement. He wants the pension. But like he comes to the quick conclusion that that's the guy and they no longer need to pursue the case.
Yep.
And that starts this weird reoccurring joke about things being thin. And I didn't know that this was a thing. This has to be the most that any movie has ever gotten out of some weird thin joke. I don't know. That case seems a little thin. And then at some point, Mel Gibson's like anorexic thin.
Oh, I didn't catch any of that.
I didn't catch that at all.
No, that's the thing. When right now at the pool scene, basically Glover thinks that the case is already
wrapped
over.
Up. Yeah.
And Gibson in the moment's like, I don't know, man, this is too thin for me. The case is really thin. And then throughout the movie, there's at least two more, if not three more thin jokes.
Oh, fuck, now I gotta
And at some point, the big delivery is, I don't know, man, that's real thin. And Mel Gibson says, anorexic thin.
Yikes.
949.
Remember that?
949-464-8257. Let me know if Jason Stewart is making any sense to you. Is this something that's at? Is this?
You don't remember anorexic fan?
I don't remember it once. Unlike
Ed, who just made up a scene, this is actually in my notes.
Yes.
I watched it.
Mailbag@theballoflifestyle.com if you understand what Jason Stewart's talking about.
I'm going to film this scene. I can see why they took it out because all it's supposed to establish is that Riggs is crazy. And then they do like four more scenes where they establish he's crazy.
Yeah, there's too much crazy as it is. You have the director's cut. So then they go to the dinner at the Murtaugh's and they're like, all right, hey, we've successful case. A few things happen at the Murtaugh's. First of all,
his daughter is I fucking Riggs.
It's a little weird. It's a little weird that his teenage daughter.
In real life, she was 27.
In real life, me and my buddies from high school who were making rankings of women from movies that we wanted to have sex with, she was up there.
Well,
top of the list.
In two, they bring her, they make her more accessible in that way.
Yes, cool, because she's become an adult. Things I noticed from dinner at the Murtaugh's, first of all, after dinner coffee, what you want to fucking be up all night? Like, cause I'm Ed, I know you're not a coffee drinker. Jason, I think you might not be one either.
I'm a huge coffee drinker.
You are.
Big time.
So I have coffee in the morning and then typically I start to drag a little ass in the afternoon. I have coffee in the afternoon, no later than 3 PM. If I have coffee after 3 PM, I'm lying awake in bed all night long. These guys are having mugs of coffee at 8 o'clock at night. Did that strike you guys as odd?
Family wrapping together struck me as
odd. That was the next thing. That was the next thing.
But coffee at night is something that you do when you know that you have to be with company for a few more hours. Like it's a way after dinner to make sure you get that energy to, for the rest of the night.
So I agree with you. If I go out to like a family, like dinner, or I'm out with friends, a lot of times I'll have a and I'm drinking. Yeah. I'll have a cappuccino. If I know I'm going to be up late anyway, I'll have a cappuccino, but just Wednesday night at home with the fam, just, hey, brew a pot, honey. No, thank you. Not happening.
I'm like a phone battery. Lower and lower energy until the end of the night.
That's
like
right.
I don't,
you're done.
I don't try to juice it at 8 o'clock because I know I'm going to plug it in when I go to bed.
It's insane. Yeah, like, yeah.
That's it.
Ed gets a lot of puss. He's trying to tell us.
The teenage daughter. What we know about the teenage daughter is she came in and hugged her dad naked in a bubbleless bath.
Yep.
And now she's eye fucking his buddy or his partner,
his cop buddy. Who's 38.
You guys, I think you guys.
I have to think Riggs, Murtaugh is packing. He looks like he's got a pretty good penis.
Yeah. I mean, he's like 6'4". He's tall. Yeah, he's like a head taller than his fridge.
The knees sticking out of the bathtub. I'm sure his hog was floating around.
He's put together for sure. 100%.
His nickname in high school football was Glove Man.
Oh,
What?
Because
you know, because you know what they say about guys with big gloves.
Oh no, big hands.
Oh boy,
big hands.
Yikes.
Big hands. Big condoms.
Yikes.
All right. So, so by the way, I googled that quote is very prevalent. It looks like it's a very popular quote in the movie Anorexic. But don't you remember in this scene?
We're back.
You know, he eats the dinner, right? And then they go out and they drink beers on the boat, Glover's like.
He shits Glover's on the wife's cooking, right?
Yeah.
Tell the truth. Did you like my wife's cooking? And he's like, no. Yeah. Well, later on in the movie, the guy's like, Glover's like, I don't know, man. That sounds thin. And Gibson's punchline in that moment was, that makes sense with your wife's cooking.
I do remember that.
I do kind of remember that.
Thin jokes.
I remember that.
Yeah, look at that.
So Riggs.
Sorry, I'm looking at the movie right now.
Yeah.
It says
another scene we haven't seen.
Happy birthday. He's opening something. Happy birthday, Sergeant Murtaugh. He's a sergeant.
But it's Riggs. I don't know. I think he's detective.
Oh, we need Riggs.
So Riggs figures out, he's like, hey, Dixie, she was up there when the Drano was getting snorted, and then she offered herself as a witness to throw people off the case. So they go to her house, and she's basically like the neighborhood hooker, because they both, this is in Inglewood. You see a plane fly over.
I have a question. So he's looking at Kelly Gaines's yearbook at some point.
83.
Yep.
Palos Verdes. Yep. Where's that?
That's
her high school.
That's where Hunsucker lives. It's high end. It's a baller neighborhood.
South Beach.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It is high end.
South Beach.
Okay.
South of Pacific Palisades. So, They go and the kids are playing outside, and they're like, the cops pull up and they're like, hey, you guys are police. They're like 6 years old. They're like, you guys here to arrest Dixie? Like, what, they know the neighborhood hooker? And also there's one white person that lives in the neighborhood and she's a hooker. Like, it's confusing. It's not cool. But then.
They start chanting at him, right? Like,
yeah.
Don't arrest Dixie.
Yeah. You gonna arrest Dixie? Something like that. So then they go walking up to the house, and tell me if you guys notice this. They walk up to the house. The house explodes. It's been rigged with explosives. And look, this is not a 9/11 conspiracy, but it would have taken a lot of explosives to make that. Like, it's not, just couldn't be the gas guy putting like one bomb there. Would only blown up part of the house. But anyway, the house blows up. They're both blown back. They probably have little bits of glass and wood like in their bodies.
Dixie just was walking by when she plummeted. Like, what she just witnessed?
No, she was in on it. She was in on it. And
she took one
for the team by acting as the witness. The house blows up, and then they're rolling around on the ground trying to protect each other. And Riggs says to Murtaugh, what are you, a fag? It's because he's touching him. Because he's touching him they're laying on the ground. He's touching him. He's trying to protect him from glass.
Glover was trying to cover him up because he says his coat was on fire.
Yeah, he goes, what are you, a fag?
Yeah. Gibson, awesome. It's the first of two casual things
time.
That Gibson says.
Mm-hmm. It was a different
He just
time.
Says, what are you, a fag, in 1987? Yep. I guess that was just reasonable comment.
Keep in mind, 2022 Mel would probably say the same thing.
That's possible. Yeah.
Also, Dixie, you wouldn't expect the neighborhood hooker to have a full inflatable snowman on the roof at Christmas time.
Weird. Yeah.
Like, she really was into it.
She's popular in the neighborhood.
She really was.
Yeah. Oh, what were you going to say, Jason? Says,
not only does he say, what are you, a fag, to Glover as he's trying to save his life. When they start to torture him, electrocute him, he asks, who's the chink?
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Wow.
I didn't hear that. Even in 87, that was a little like, what would it matter? The guys. Well, although, hold on. These guys were in NAMM.
And the NAMM connection was how the little kid described the meter reader having the same tat as Riggs.
That tattoo was the size of.
But they're inherently racist against Asians.
That tattoo was so small.
Right, the kid
has to be unnoticeable.
Kid is like two doors down.
Yeah, yeah. And
it would have to be a face tattoo for a kid to notice.
It was tiny from across the street. There's no way you could have noticed that. And also, I mean, it wraps up a little too easily because then Riggs is like, well, you only get one of these if you're in Shadow Company. You know, like it's like this only someone like me could have this, you know.
I'm looking at the scene again.
Yeah.
The kid who saw it. First of all, he's wearing 3D glasses in the middle of the day, which was weird. He's wearing an end apartheid T-shirt.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
Dick Donner. Dick Donner was going hard on that movement.
So a couple. So Murtaugh's like, I'm going to talk to these kids. And he's like, hey, he gets their names. He's like, oh, Alfred or whatever. He goes, I bet you like GoBots. And I'm like, oh, like the fucking shittiest toy made in the 80s. Like nobody like
Betamax of Transformers.
Yeah. Nobody like GoBots. Like nobody like that. And then the kids are like, and look, this is how you know this is not a modern phenomenon. The kids are like, Mama said policemen like to shoot black people.
Oh, wow. Mama,
this was before Rodney King.
Yes, of course.
This was before.
And then a
few years.
And then Murtaugh's like, oh, who's the guy you see? And then he goes to a 6-year-old. He goes, can you draw him? Like, I'm 47. Like, you asked me to draw someone. It would look like I had an affliction. It looked like a special person.
Homer Simpson. Yes. I can't draw like a real person.
I can't draw any. Like, can you draw him? And also, don't they have people? Don't they have people that know how to talk to people that get the make the sketches like the Unabombers? Like,
yeah,
just crazy, crazy
sketch artist. Yeah,
yeah.
So then he goes back to Hunsaker's place.
Yeah,
and he's like, "All right, you've been a big fucking liar. I thought we were old buddies. Yeah. And you're making a whole bunch of shit up."
Yeah. And what's going on? Is there a funeral happening there? Like, what's happening?
I think it's the funeral for the jumper. That's what I thought.
Oh,
his
daughter. He's not even at his own daughter's funeral. He's inside. He's
hanging out with his old buddy.
And what's he doing? He's drinking fucking eggnog.
Out of the carton.
There's multiple cartons of nog set up, like dozens of cartons of eggnog set up.
Empty pill bottle too.
Yeah.
I'm counting. There's 7 cartons of eggnog.
He takes a pill, he swigs nog, and then Mr. Joshua flies up from the ocean in a helicopter and shoots him through the window, and the bullet goes through his back and through the carton of nog, and nog starts ejaculating all over the...
There's 8 cartons of nog.
Who's this much? 8. Like, nog, you have one sip of every other Christmas. Like, who's this into nog that there's dozens of? Yeah.
Also, it's not like he opens the fridge and has some nog.
They're out.
There's just 8 cartons of nog,
warm nog,
sitting in a guy's office.
Yeah.
Warm nog.
And also, they do a whole bunch to describe why he hasn't been killed and why the daughter was killed. And then they just kill him.
Right. He's like, they can't kill me. They need me too much. 2 seconds later, he's fucking dead. Then they're like, we gotta find Murtaugh because he knows our plan. Well, assume he knows your plan. Change your plan. Their whole thing is like, we gotta find these guys. We gotta see what Hunsaker told them. Why? Just pivot to a different plan and you'll be fine.
But the big reveal of the movie is that the dad knew about this whole thing because these special ops people from Nam were doing a heroin drug
situation. Yep.
And they had him compromised and they killed his daughter and they were going to kill the other daughter. They ended up killing him.
But they killed the daughter and him because he wanted out of the heroin business, right?
Something about that, or he knew.
I think it was like they had been doing this for 15 years, and then they went out.
I don't think they needed to use his bank. Yeah, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, who knows?
Why did they kill her?
It would be a big detail, though.
Right? How'd I miss that, Jason? You catch all the weird details.
Yeah, I don't.
Especially the thin.
They weren't very good at communicating. Yeah, they should have done a thin joke. Then I would have really paid attention. But like, I think they're they sent a helicopter to Palos Verdes to kill this guy.
Yep.
And then Gibson shoots at the helicopter and recognizes quote unquote the albino. I don't know if the caricature, if the character description calls for an albino, and that's what he was supposed to be.
He's not an albino. Look.
Or is it the creepy one from the Dudley Moore Foul Play movie? The
terrifying, terrifying. Still scared of that albino. Still absolutely in fear of him to this moment. So scary. Well, no. Then they're on a street corner and they try to kill Murtaugh in a drive-by.
They try to kill Riggs. They shoot him through a window.
That's what I mean. They try to. And look, these guys are CIA assassins. They shoot in the head. They use the same murder methods as the gangsters and Boys in the Hood. This is how
they killed Doughboy.
Right. The car is doing a sliding skid while they're shooting, and they're like, "Oh, we got him." Yeah. Riggs is like, he's like, "That's the same asshole that did Hunsacker." And then
he could have seen that.
Yeah. And then Murtaugh goes, "How do you know that?" He goes, "Are you sure?" He goes, "I never forget an asshole." who is he?
A lot of ways to go with that.
Is he my buddy Paul in Tucson? he just recognized him in a sliding car. But then they can pretend that he's dead because he's shot. He wore his vest
They really jumped to that conclusion, right? Because even though he was wearing a bulletproof vest and everything, Mel Gibson was like, "Well, now then they know that they think I'm dead. We could use that to our advantage." Like, how do you know that they know you're dead? That conclusion
because they're going to really call that one officer and be like, "Hey, just checking up. Yeah. Is he alive?
Yeah,
no, he's dead.
Why is that the guy?" And the guy, he's like, "Hey, I'm from KCOP Channel 13, where Jason's dear friend Vic the Brick used to be the sports."
Lauren Sanchez.
Yeah.
Lauren Bezos' wife.
Yes, Lauren Sanchez. Where Lauren Sanchez once said that Pete Sampras was the best player of his ERA. Yes, that's her. Where she would also mispronounce, where she would call the city of Glendale Glendolly. Yes, that same Lauren Sanchez. He's like, "Oh, my house." He's like, that sounds like Nicole's boyfriend. And so they race to his house and they realize that his daughter's been kidnapped. And then, and then Riggs is like, "I got a plan." And this is his plan. He says, "We do it my way." He goes, "We're going to get bloody on this one."
Oh,
that's not much of, that's not much of a plan.
That's a good plan.
That's not much of a plan. Then hold on, Ed. I'm going to let you finish. Then the phone rings and the bad guys are on the phone and they go, "Yeah, we have your daughter. She's looking pretty hot. We'll probably do some rapes." And they go, "If you want her back, meet us at the dry lake at Victorville." It's fucking 2 hours away in the high desert. Like, can't we do it around here? Like, that's my first question. I'm like, are you kidding?
That's exactly what Christina said. Yeah, as we were watching.
With the trap, I got to get on the 15. I got to go through Norco. That's a hike. Yeah. Like, fuck that. Like, let's do it around here somewhere. Ed, you were saying.
I did. It's more a question for you guys. So I did enjoy this movie after not seeing it for a long time.
It's good.
But why didn't they just kill Danny Glover?
Because they had to know what he knew.
Yes.
They had to know what he knew.
Why wouldn't you just kill him and then you don't have to worry about what he
So knew. He wouldn't know anymore. You could just kill him. That was the very flimsy reason why they had to keep the good guys alive in this movie.
Yes.
Kidnap the daughter to draw him out.
Yep.
So they could then kidnap him. Knew.
Just kill everybody. Just kill everybody right there. Because Riggs is piping people with his fucking long range. Because he tells us earlier, he's like,
he says, I'm great at killing
people. He's like, "I killed a guy at 1,000 yards in Laos." In high winds, he's like, "There's 10 people in the world that can make the shot." The guys that can do that don't brag about that, but that's okay. It's a movie. Yeah. Then he's wasting guys. Dunk, 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 dunk. He shoots either the guy on either side that's holding the daughter. And then
he could have killed Busey.
Yeah, he's got a long draw on Mr. Joshua, doesn't take the shot. And then the general comes up and snuggles him, just like softly rubs his face with the gun. Just kill him. Kill the guy. He's right there. Just kill him.
You just took out like 8 of your guys.
All the bad guys are there.
You kill him.
Just kill him. Just kill him.
He takes out 8 of the guys via sniper. And by the way, let me add to to the plan that Brian laid out. So not only did he say we're going to get bloody, but he says this is the plan. We're going to do it my way. We're going to shoot to kill. The only thing you can't do is miss. That right. was the plan. The right. entire plan yeah. for the good guys to make sure that this happens. That was the plan.
Not a great plan.
He shoots all the guys with a sniper gun. He can't shoot Busey because, quote unquote, get out of the way, Raj.
But he was,
wait,
then
he shot everybody.
Then they show he had him in his sights yeah. for 38 yeah. seconds. Yeah.
Get move, Raj. Like what? And then, so then after he had shot everybody, the, Raj tells his daughter to get into the limo and drive off. She pushes a dead driver aside and just starts driving. And Busey's plan is to tell the helicopter to go get the limo.
Yeah.
What the fuck is the helicopter going to do with the limo?
It did.
How's it? I know yeah, it did eventually, yeah, yeah. but I'm like, how are they going to find this reach way of a helicopter yep. apprehending a fucking limousine?
Yeah. yeah. No, it was insane.
It's like the fire department SUV. Dries up on the scene yes. and it can just identify fires. Yes. It can't actually fight the fire.
It's no,
right.
It's unclear why the bad guys didn't kill them. And then at some point I have a note here. Riggs makes some, he's like, I knew these guys or I saw these guys back in Saigon in 69. Well, it's when oh, he is. Was fucking 12 years old. Like it's like, this is like Brian Adams, great Canadian rock star, pop star, summer of 69. You weren't old enough. Hey, fam, there's still a lot more of this episode to hear, but it's only available to our bonus content subscribers. Click the link in the show notes or go to theballerlifestyle.com and subscribe so you never miss a minute of the show.
With Easy Ed Daily and a man, Jay Stew, and Brian Beckner, quick to dissect the week in sports and culture and whatever. Talking loud, comments, conundrums, my brothers, reviewing some movies and shows and others. Top podcast, man, no one is above us. 5-star, even the haters will love us. And we're not trying to talk politics a lot. We'd much rather talk about dicks a lot. Shit's so hot, man, you know the shit's on top. Top podcast, man, it really hits the spot. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is so flawless. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is for all.